Guys, welcome back. It's a new week and a new episode of Founder Story. I'm Dan Larson. This week's episode is brought to you by Blue Canyon Visuals, a full-service video production company. Blue Canyon Visuals prides themselves in bringing your mission, story, and brand to your audience. Go to BlueCanyonVisuals.com. My listeners get 20% off their first video project. Just mention Founder Story Podcast. On our last episode, we talked with Cubby James, creator of the restaurant Cubby's. We announced a giveaway to celebrate. Congratulations to Whitney Carson. You are the winner of the $25 gift card. Congrats, Whitney. Hope you enjoy Cubby's. All right, this week, I'm joined by John Richards from Nomadic and Maddox Labs. You'll hear how John took $200, a trip to Joanna's fabric store, and launched a series of successful businesses on Kickstarter. You'll also hear keys to successful marketing on Facebook and the importance of good timing. Music on this episode from Andrew Apple Pie, Joachim Karud, and Tycho. On this week's episode of the Founder Story Podcast, I am joined by John Richards. John, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. So a little backstory. A couple weeks ago, I had Taylor Dame on the podcast. He was with Proof Eyewear, done a bunch of cool stuff, and he was super nice to introduce me to you. We don't know each other. This is the first time we've met, but I've heard that you are basically like a genius at Kickstarter. So I'm really excited to learn from you and hear your story. So thanks again for being on there. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. Taylor's an awesome guy.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like for me, what's interesting about this podcast and the stories is the stories, hearing like what went behind the business, like how you got the ideas and how you got started. So I want to go all the way back to the beginning. Where did you grow up? Where are you from?
Awesome. Yeah, I grew up in Salt Lake City for the first 13 years of my life and then moved to St. Louis, Missouri for 3 years in the big city there, and moved back for junior and senior year of high school at East High School. So I grew up mostly in Salt Lake, but a little bit in Missouri as well.
Nice. So were you one of those kids that like had a lemonade stand or like your own business? Like when you were a kid, was it always something that was part of you that you wanted to be an entrepreneur and own your own business?
Yeah, for sure. That's funny. Yeah, I was always kind of known for just taking things apart, putting them back together as a kid. For me, it was more just like discovering products and discovering how they work and making things more functional, you know, like tying a string on my light switch at night so I could turn off the lights without getting out of bed, that kind of thing, you know.
Or yeah,
I always just wanted to make like really functional stuff. And, you know, in high school, I did have one business where I cleaned garbage cans. So that was to raise money.
Solving
for
real problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Those sneaky cans, you know, I would go door to door and I'd scrub them out for people. And I made quite a bit of money doing that. So.
Yeah. So it's just always been part of you since you were young. You love being entrepreneurial.
I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur for sure.
That's awesome. So before our meeting today, I just looked you up on LinkedIn and wanted to know a little bit about your history and kind of how you came to where you are now. So you went to BYU.
Yep.
What did you do at BYU?
Yeah, I graduated from BYU in 2014, did business management in the Marriott School. And my emphasis there was entrepreneurship. So I basically wanted to be an entrepreneur and I didn't want to study any of the boring subjects. I just wanted to do what I wanted to do. And they had some good professors there. And I learned a lot and I was glad I did that program. So
yeah. Did you have like businesses on the side as you were going to BYU that you were running and kind of figuring out what you wanted to do? Or is it no, like I got to buckle down, do school, and then at some point I'll have my big idea?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to brand myself as like a finance guru.
Yeah.
So I actually started out in finance. I did an internship with IBM for 8 months in Minnesota. I did a property management company and managed all their books. So it was all finance based until I hit time to graduate and realized that I just didn't like numbers and it was just all kind of more to just build my resume than anything else. And so, yeah, I kind of tried to do that and I realized that my true passion was in entrepreneurship. So
cool. So after those financial jobs, like how did you make that transition from like doing an internship with IBM and a couple of other jobs to, you know, starting your own thing? Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs like the idea of branching out and doing their own thing, but maybe struggle with like making that transition. So how did you make that jump from, you know, one of those financial jobs to starting your own thing?
Yeah. So I actually started out in sales. So right after graduation, I started at Bamboo HR. It's a great HR software company in Linden, Utah here. I loved working for that company. It was at the time I was, you know, under 100 employees and it was kind of just growing itself really big. I loved learning from the founders there and they, you know, just the leadership there was awesome. And so kind of deep down inside, I had a passion and I wanted to do something, but at the time it was like, I got to pay the bills. And, you know, yeah. Same thing like you're saying, I was scared to just jump out and do it, just like everyone else is. But at the time, you know, this is spring of 2014, me and my cousin went to a Utah Jazz game. And
wait. You said you weren't a we talked a minute ago. You said you weren't a Jazz fan.
I'm not a Jazz fan. I mean, I'm technically that's my favorite NBA team, but you know, I go to maybe one game a year. So when I get some free tickets offered to me, I can't say no. But yeah,
this is an important game.
Yeah, this actually was kind of a monumental moment for us. So we talked there and we said, let's start a project together. Let's do a business, you know, make a little extra income and just learn principles of business together. So Jacob Durham and I, we just decided, let's do it. So, you know, we started researching the market and that's when we realized Kickstarter was just a really awesome platform.
Yeah.
And so we said, let's take advantage of this. And, you know, we researched a bunch of products and anyway, came up with the idea of doing a wallet. And that's kind of where the whole business began. So as I was at Bamboo HR, the whole time we're kind of developing this wallet on the side. And, you know, it's starting to kind of take off and I'm still doing sales calls every day and realizing I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. Yeah. So I had a lot of motivation and I just said, let's make this work. And so, yeah, December of 2014, I packed up my desk and walked out and Bamboo was awesome. They were super kind about it and they were even encouraging me to take that step. And so it was all really good that's, feelings.
That's awesome. Yeah. So wait, was it your cousin you said you went to the game with?
Yeah. Or? So yeah, Jacob's actually my cousin. So we grew up together. We would spend our summers in Montana as kids, just playing on the beach or, you know, building forts or whatever, you know, and we had a lot of fun together as kids. And so we said, you know, we kind of rekindled that friendship and said, let's do something together. And
yeah,
that's kind of where it all began.
So when you guys started talking about, you know, hey, let's do a business together, you clearly had that entrepreneurial spirit for a long time. Did you have like a list of ideas that you were working on before you got to the wallet? Or did you both just come together and say, my wallet's clunky or it doesn't work well? Like, yeah. how did that evolve to the wallet's the first product we want to focus on?
Yeah, at the time, we definitely made a list of here's some things that we feel like, you know, need improving. But the wallet was more, it was more just because wallets always perform well on Kickstarter, right? So it's like, if you want to launch a product on Kickstarter and just get funded, yeah. A wallet's like so easy. There's hundreds of them. People launch them every month and they get funded. So we're like, you know, let's set a $10,000 goal. Let's see if we can do this. And that was one of the main drivers behind the wallet. But we also were passionate about wallets. At the time, I was carrying a minimalist leather wallet that I loved, but it didn't do a couple key things. And I was like, I think I could make a better one. And I just started playing with the idea. So, yeah.
So did the idea of saying we want to do something on Kickstarter come before the passion for the wallet? Was like, hey, let's go figure out how people are doing stuff successfully on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And then the wallet came out of that.
Yes. It was more like, let's launch something on Kickstarter. And then we're like, what product? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
It's funny though, because I mean, that kind of, honestly, that kind of doesn't put as much light on the wallet as it should. I guess the wallet ended up being like a pretty revolutionary product for our brand. It pretty much propelled our whole company forward because we created something in Jacob's basement together. We've done all the product development together. And, you know, when we were playing around with this idea of this pull tab and how to make it work, it was like, once we nailed down the idea, it was like, this is actually really cool. And we started handing it to our friends and family and they're like, this is the best wallet I've ever used. It wasn't just like, hey, cool idea, guys, you know, Like you can,
it's like a single pocket wallet.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. You can tell
beyond that.
We could tell by their responses. It was like, these people are passionate about what we've created, and that was exciting. And then we shipped out our wallets after Kickstarter, and the same thing, the response from the customers was like, wow, this is really cool. And so I think that was like really reassuring to us to know like, hey, we can do this.
Like, made something people like.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool. So I want to dive a little bit more into kind of the R&D part of that. Did you have any experience? Like, how did you go after you decided I want to do a wallet? How did you go about figuring out what it would look like?
Yeah.
And how it would work.
Yeah,
and what it'd be made out of and all that kind of stuff.
Funny story, actually. Yeah. So we were in Jacob's basement and we found one of his wife's like running headbands.
Oh,
uh-huh. And I was just playing around with it and I pulled out a piece of paper and I ripped the paper so that it created this kind of pull tab. You know, I just basically a long strip of paper. I took out my credit cards. I wrapped the hairband around it and threaded the paper through it. And just, I started playing around with it. And I realized that if I threaded it right through the middle of the cards and I pulled the tab, it would actually eject the cards and I could get access to four different cards at the same time. And that was kind of like where the idea was born. And Jacob like learned to actually sew in his basement. So that night he got on the sewing machine and he started sewing and he sewed the first prototype and he was super excited. And then from there on out, like it was like two or three prototypes a night. He was sending me videos the next day being like, dude, look how cool this is. And I was doing the same thing to him. I made a couple in my house, just like stitching them by hand and saying, let's add a pocket here and let's, you know, make these little changes. And we really just every inch of that wall, we looked at very closely to say, how can it be as functional as possible? So.
And you were just like making these out of some type of fabric?
Or? Yeah, we just went to like the corner store, like Joann's, where they just sell like fabric. And we did got some elastic. We got some straps and we got some leather from like this local store that just had scraps and we just sewed it together ourselves. So
that's yeah. So cool. I love that. You just like figure it out and make it happen.
Yeah.
So this concept with the pull tab, I've seen wallets that have that. At the time, was anyone else doing that? Or were you guys like the first to come up with that design or that concept?
Yeah. So there's wallets that you can pull the tab and all of the cards will come out at the same time,
mm-hmm.
but none have ever allowed you to have access to more cards by using the pull tab, if that makes sense. So it like separates the cards. So there are pull tab wallets on the market. They're cool, but you know, nothing was like as flexible as ours, as durable as ours. And it just kind of, yeah, it's ended up being a really good project.
That's awesome. So for the listeners, you just pulled out your wallet and you're showing me what it looks like. It's really high quality. Like what iteration, how many versions have come before this one, because it's very cool.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be exaggerating if I said 20 to 30 different prototypes that came out of Jacob's sewing machine.
Yeah.
And then from there, I mean, we met with our factory and just saw tons of samples of colors, of different materials. We got like, you know, 4 to 6 different elastic materials and tested them and we stretched them 100 times. We even put up to like 52 cards in one just to see like how much can this thing actually hold, you know?
right.
And it was just bursting at the seams and totally unusable after. But, you know, we really pushed the limits on these to see what's right. And we found, you know, between 4 and 12, you know, 4 to 14 cards is what we always say. That's like the perfect range and it can hold them really well. Without 4 cards, you don't really get the benefit of the wallet. So, yeah.
That's very cool. Okay, so you did a bunch of prototypes really quickly. You liked the idea. You thought, okay, we have something here. How did you go about getting them manufactured? At what point did you start your Kickstarter project and say, okay, we want to fund this? I'm just like interested in the timeline and how you went about like getting someone to help you build it at a bigger scale.
Okay. So, it's funny. Jacob's actually a pretty massive asset to the business. So if you don't know Jacob, he has a really awesome background. So he's an accountant, he's a CPA by trade. And then he also worked for his family's company for about 8 years doing product sourcing overseas. So he already had experience sourcing products overseas in China, communicating with different factories. And so that was a huge value add to us. And so we worked together on all the product development, but then he would be the one communicating all of the changes we'd want to make. They'd send back the prototypes to us and we'd just go back and forth like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for our first campaign, we actually made the mistake of launching the campaign before we even had a factory lined up. So it was like, let's just do this. We know we can find someone that can make this. You know, for a wallet, it was pretty simple. We're like, you know, someone can stitch this, whether it's like my sister or like, right. You know, someone in China. So anyway, we ended up launching the product. It took about 2 months, actually probably more, to prep that entire campaign when it comes down to like the images and video and content. Like, keep in mind, we were both working 40-hour jobs at the time. Yeah. And so we were probably putting in 20 hours on top of our 40-hour jobs just to get this campaign off the ground. And we set a goal of $10,000 and we said, let's do it. So we launched. That was fall. It was October of 2014. Mm-hmm. So we launched and, you know, within like the first day, we're like, whoa, we're at $5,000. Like, we're going to hit our goal. You know, it was kind of like groundbreaking. And we're like, man, we're on pace to hit $20,000 by the end of our campaign. We're really excited. And anyway, long story short, we ended up learning that advertising is like the key to Kickstarter. And just no one will back your project unless there's eyeballs there seeing it, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to get a project to go viral. And so you've got to push the paid advertising to get people on there. And so we ended up running across a couple guys here locally in Utah that did paid advertising really well. I sat down with one of them for an hour and he kind of trained me on how to do Facebook ads. And, you know, they really helped propel our company. So that was kind of like a key person that I met along the way that it really helped. I mean, after 1 hour of learning from him, I was able to just dive in myself and learn how to do Facebook ads and pretty much drive their business from there on forward through Facebook advertising. So
that's amazing. So did you, before you started the project or like opened the funding, had you met him before?
No, we got introduced like 2 weeks in, or I guess like 10 days into our campaign, we got introduced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And you just thought like, I got to learn how to get more eyeballs on this and get more people to see it.
Yeah. It was like, how can we make this popular? And it worked out. I mean, that campaign ended up being, so we've since launched three other campaigns and those have done quite well. And so that campaign was like the catalyst that kind of set everything in motion. And, you know, moving forward, now we've really grown our business. And with each Kickstarter that we've launched, we've been able to have more and more funding each time. So
that's very cool. Kickstarter is awesome. Taylor talked about it a little bit on the episode that he was on. I'm curious, with that hour meeting that you had with the guy that was helping you understand, you know, the paid advertising, if you had to like distill that down to like a couple of key points of like, what were your takeaways from that? Because it sounds like you had this meeting with him and it was just like, you know, lightning. It was like, wow, you learned a lot of like really important stuff in that meeting. If you had to like distill that down, what were some of those like maybe key things that you took out of that? Like, oh, now I understand how it works. Or was it, okay, now I understand the basics. And then you just went from there and figured it out on your own.
Yeah. So that was like my first intro to Facebook Power Editor. And that's like where you can go in the back end and actually create an ad campaign, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a big piece. Is before it was like you kind of follow what Facebook throws at you, which is like, hey, create an ad, and it just walks you through the steps. And it's not as like, it's very intuitive and it helps you create your first ad, but it's not, you can't get as like dialed and targeted. So I would say number one is the value of lookalike audiences. So that's like the first biggest thing that I learned was if you have a good email list of your customer base, you can create an audience that looks a lot like those types of people that would purchase your product, and you can advertise directly to them without actually having like their emails or anything, right? So you're able to put it in their newsfeed and they can see it. And so that was huge, being able to advertise to people that had never heard of us, mm-hmm. Or that were interested in Kickstarter, for example.
How did you come up with that, like that picture of who that person was, or like those characteristics that you were looking for? Did you just know it from the beginning, or did you kind of shape that?
No, I didn't,
and dial that in over time.
Yeah, so I didn't know, and I didn't. I you know, I'm still trying to figure out who our target customer is. Yeah. But at the time, you can upload an email list into Facebook, mm-hmm. and it does the homework for you. So I don't have to say this person is between 35 and 40 years old and, you know, like that. So you don't have to get that targeted. But anyway, yeah, so that I would say those are some of the key things that I learned about just Facebook advertising in general and, you know, building campaigns that target the right types of people. The ads are a big piece too. So how you create the actual ad copy, the imagery, all of that. this has become a really big part of our business. And the reason is when we, so I pretty much scaled the business through Facebook advertising for that first year on my own. And I got as far as I could to the point where I was tapping out on Facebook. And I just said, I can't, there's like nothing more I can learn. Mm-hmm. I don't know where else to go. And I actually came across a guy named Aaron Novak, who was way more knowledgeable than me when it came to Facebook advertising. And I said, let's go to lunch. So we went to lunch with him and we realized, you know, he was a really good fit. And we said, do you want to do some basically independent contractor work for us on the side and just see if you can get our ads to work? And so he did. And after he saw the numbers, he's like, this is really awesome. Like, I'm going to be able to really do some cool things with this. And so we said, awesome, do it. Over the next couple of months, he really scaled our ads and took them to the levels that I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we're like, do you want a full-time job? And he's like, yeah. So we gave him a full-time job and he accepted the offer. And that was super exciting. You know, that was like one of the first team members. Technically the second or third team member we brought on the team. And he was just super experienced. He was like the head of marketing at an advertising agency here in Utah. And
he's legit.
Yeah, he was legit. Yeah. And so we're like, we can do this. And you know, within like a month of him working full-time for us, he's like, guys, I have so much time on my hands. And we're like, I know. And we could tell he was getting anxious, like he was going to start taking other clients and stuff. And so we're like, let's start an agency. So we actually started our own marketing advertising agency called Maddox Labs. And he's the one who's headed that up. And so all of our advertising from that point forward has been run through this agency that we created ourselves. And he's now been kind of the change. So for that first year, I've run Facebook ads, but since then I literally haven't touched him. Like, he's done it all. So I'm not as knowledgeable right now as I should be. It's probably been like a year and a half since I've done much of it, but.
And that's cool. That's what it's all about, right? It's like building out your team and finding people who are really good in specific areas and like recruiting talented people to be part of the team.
Right? Exactly.
All right, quick break for our sponsor, Blue Canyon Visuals, a full-service video production company. Blue Canyon Visuals prides themselves in bringing your mission, story, and brand to your audience. Go to BlueCanyonVisuals.com. My listeners get 20% off their first video project. Just mention Founder Story Podcast. That first campaign went really well. I'm assuming, you know, it sounds like you hit your goal. The wallet went well. What came after that? Did you transition to focusing more on the agency then and Maddox Labs? Or did you say, okay, we want to do another Kickstarter? Like, what was your next evolution after the wallet was successful?
Yeah, so after the wallet was successful, you know, we had some money in the bank and I left my full-time job and was like, let's do this. 6 months later, Jacob jumped out of his full-time job and was able to, at that point, we're both full-time. It was really awesome to both be free. And I don't know, like, there's something about being an entrepreneur where you just feel like this mantle of like freedom that just rests on your shoulders. And it's like, it's not heavy. It's like, it's heavy because you know you have to get so much done, but at the same time, you just like feel so good. And so we're both really excited at this point to just really scale our business. And so rather than just making it a project on the side, we're like, let's do this. We researched Kickstarter heavily and said, how can we grow our customer base? And how can we make an impact? The product we narrowed it down to was a notebook. So we said a notebook is truly the next step to say we can grow our customer base by a lot because we can not only sell a notebook, but we can offer a PDF for like $1 pledge, right? So that way we get a lot more emails. We could get a bigger customer base. And at the same time, we created a planner that basically helps people improve and set goals and change their lives. So it was kind of a pretty cool project for us to be a part of. We launched the notebook on Kickstarter and doubled our funding of the wallet over that campaign. And we were like, wow, this is really awesome, you know?
So our things are clicking at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. And we said, this is cool. Let's get into something that's maybe a little more technical. At this point, we said we want to develop a travel bag. So we spent the next year. This was our longest product development cycle. You know, between the wallet and the notebook, there was only 6 to 8 months of development. Mm-hmm. But between the notebook and the travel bag, it was a full year of prototyping. We flew out to China, met with 4 different factories, anyway, it was a long process, but we ended up launching the travel bag on Kickstarter in, this is now July of 2015 or 2016, I believe. I'm not sure the dates.
The years all bleed together. When you're an entrepreneur, you just don't sleep. You're working too hard.
No, that we launched that last year. So it's 2016. And so we launched the travel bag. And this one, I don't know what happened, but we just struck a chord with our supporters. So our customer base is everything to us. We owe we owe them everything. And Kickstarter is such a cool platform because it encourages that community.
Yeah.
It encourages that. And so at this point, you know, we had like 20,000 customers emails and we were like really excited to launch this. And our travel bag, within the first 24 hours, we had like, we were like $200,000 funded, which was
no way.
Yeah. This is like, you know, beating our wallet campaign in one day.
And what was your goal for the whole project?
The goal for the whole project, I believe, was 30,000.
30,000. You got 200,000.
Or maybe it was 20. Yeah, it was 20 or 30,000. And in the first day, we pretty much, did like 10X our goal. And so we're like, no
way. Were you refreshing? Like, I think the page is broken. I'm not sure that this is right.
Seriously. You know, you refresh and it's like a couple thousand dollars. Refresh a couple thousand dollars and you're just kind of like checking your pulse. Like, holy cow, this is this is amazing. Am I dead? You know? But yeah, really the customers just like responded like, this is awesome. They were so excited. And that campaign went on to raise $1.7 million. And that was our biggest campaign ever, obviously. And we're like, all right, this is it. We're going to be a bag company now. So we kind of,
why
like,
wouldn't you be?
Exactly. Right? That bag kind of put our other products to shame, honestly. And we said, you know, a wallet and notebook, those are like accessories now, you know, like not even a big deal. And so now we've really pushed our bags and we've actually come out with a whole line of bags now. So we've since launched a backpack and a travel pack. And those did $2.2 million on Kickstarter. Wow. And, we're developing some other fun products right now. So we've got a whole lineup of bags that we're trying to launch by the end of next year. And it's really exciting.
That's very cool. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Okay. I want to go back a little bit to, I know the notebook, you put that to shame with the bag, but one thing that you mentioned that I'm curious about was you said that you created a PDF and that an important part of like growing your customer base was getting the email addresses in. And it sounds like having like an entry level offer or something that people could get into. What was the PDF? I want to understand that.
Yeah. Sorry. I keep jumping ahead.
No, you're good. I love this stuff. And so I want to get into all the details.
That's
this is good.
Yeah. So the notebook, the PDF was basically a PDF version of our planner.
Okay.
So we said you get the daily, monthly, and weekly layouts. Mm-hmm. You get all of our, weekly activities. We met with, Kirk Wilkinson. He's the author of The Happiness Factor. And we created a set of basically weekly activities to say, these are ways that you can improve your life. These are ways you can feel more gratitude. There's lots of research that says that gratitude can actually increase productivity.
Yeah.
It can make you, you know, just being grateful is an awesome thing. And so we really dove into that. We wanted to create something that helped people be humble, grateful, and just go-getters, you know, achievers. And so,
So that was a digital version of what you had in your physical notebook.
Exactly.
Cool.
That's all it was. And it was, you pledge $1 and we'll send you the PDF copy of our planner.
And was that pretty important in gathering like good information about your customer base? Did you get a lot from that PDF offer, or was it just kind of an aspect of your Kickstarter campaign?
Well, you know, the notebook was compelling enough. We added enough features to the notebook. We had like this cool way to add your pen to the notebook, and we have this dual elastic system where you can actually hold down the pages in your notebook. And so we created, you know, this whiteboard paper in the back and perforated pages and all this stuff where it was like, this is unlike any notebook you've ever used. Mm-hmm. And so I think people kind of took the jump to say, rather than just pledging $1, I'm just going to get the notebook. Otherwise I'm just printing this on paper and it's kind of annoying, you know?
Yeah.
Plus the notebooks were at a pretty good rate. I mean, we were selling them for like pre-selling there for like $20 to $30. So it was like, wow, I can get all this, you know? So I think it was more of a compulsive buy. And so the $1 PDF, there was a lot of people that opted into that, but it wasn't anywhere near what we thought it would be. We ended up with 9,000 backers total.
Uh-huh.
And that was mostly notebook sales. I mean, mostly notebook customers, I should say, or planner customers. So
cool.
Yeah. So yeah, it was important, but I don't think it was like, I think the more important part is that we focused on making the product so good that it was like the customers just wanted to have that in their hands. And this one, we focused a lot on packaging and the delivery, and you know, they got them and it was like this in this awesome box, and just the whole experience was a lot cooler. And it was kind of unique for us to do that, because the wallet we just basically sent in a plastic bag, you know, it was like here. But the notebook, we took a lot of time to say, let's make this something unique and help people improve their lives. And it was a lot of fun.
That's very cool. Yeah. Okay. So I want to understand a little bit about how you transitioned from, so the notebook was successful. You decided that you wanted to do the travel bag, but there's some time. I think you said earlier that the kind of the planning phase for the bag, it's a bigger thing. It's more complicated. That was a longer process. Did you just take the money that you earned from the notebook and reinvest it back in the business? Or was there any stressful time between, like, the wallet was good, the notebook was even better, but then your next big thing was there a lot of time in there that was stressful at all in getting to the huge goal you ended up hitting with the bag? Or what was that part like from kind of like an investment standpoint?
That's a good question. Yeah. So I would have been super stressed if all of our revenue was coming from Kickstarter. So luckily, you know, we've actually been able to replicate the success we see on Kickstarter on our own website.
Okay.
So as soon as the product ends on Kickstarter, we go into the manufacturing phase, right? So 14 days after the project ends, we receive the funds, we place the order with our manufacturers, and we manufacture for, you know, 2 to 3 months, depending on the product. And then it ships on the sea for 30 to 40 days. And then it arrives in our warehouse, we ship it out. As soon as we ship it out to our Kickstarter backers, within that week, we have it up and live on our website saying you can now order this and you'll get it in, you know, 3 to 5 days. Wow. So it's like, it's a pretty long process. And the people that, you know, we really appreciate the people that support us on Kickstarter, because they're kind of making a sacrifice and waiting, but they also get to have the input and make small changes to the product. So
and they're part of it, right?
Yeah, they are. They absolutely are. And, you know, once that's delivered, we're offering that to our future customers. And so we've been able to, what we do is we take the same Facebook advertising methods and we drive all the traffic to our website.
You just redirect it.
Yeah. And we're able to drive a significant number of sales that way. So yeah, with the wallet, you know, we raised $170,000 in 30 days on Kickstarter. And then as soon as it hit our website, you know, we were running ads for almost a full year, and we were able to drive about $1.5 million through Facebook ads. So it wasn't just the 170 that we lived off of, right? It was like between each of these campaigns, we, at this point, we'd become a multi-million dollar company where we were driving millions of dollars worth of revenue through Facebook advertising.
Wow. Yeah. And did you guys ever take on investors, or did you guys just do this all yourselves by reinvesting in the business?
So it's funny. We always laugh about this because we went to Joann's and bought materials for wallets. We literally invested $200 into this company, and that's it. We've never taken outside funding. You know, we've never gone to our parents for money or whatever. It's just all been us, just bootstrapping. And we always reinvest the cash into the business, and we take, you know, what we need to survive. But other than that, we've just, the business is basically a machine, and it just works really well. And as long as we keep putting in the time and hard work, it just stays oiled and keeps working. So
that's incredible. Put yourself back in that jazz game you went to with your cousin. Did you ever think that it would get this big or be this successful?
No way, not a chance. No, I thought, oh, we'll do this fun project and we'll make, you know, $10,000 and we'll split it half and half and it'll be nice.
And that'll be cool.
Yeah, I'll have a little bit extra money in my pocket, pay some bills, you know, but no, absolutely not. This has completely changed my life forever. This has now become who I am. I mean, Nomadic is like, it's everything to me. We spend every day, all day working on this. At this point, you know, our other marketing company, Maddox Labs, is basically in Aaron's hands, and he manages the whole thing. So we spend very little time there, and he's got a great team to support him. But for us, it's Nomadic, and we build really awesome bags now. And that's not, I can, like, now I just say I'm a bag designer. Like, that's what we do for a living. Cool. So it's a lot of fun. We get to design things that we use every day, and they're tools that we can identify with and that we feel like need to be improved. And it's a lot of fun.
That's very cool. Yeah. That's very cool. So I'm curious, if Kickstarter didn't exist or ended tomorrow, what would you do differently? Would you continue kind of operating the same way and just trying to get attention on social media and drive that to your side instead? Or like, what would you do differently if Kickstarter wasn't around?
Yeah, that's a really key question. That's actually been at the top of our minds this year. That's been our focus. So to answer your question, we are so blessed at this point. You know, we have grown our customer base over the past 4 Kickstarter campaigns, plus all the advertising we do to our website. We've grown our customer base up to over 120,000 emails now that we have to use. And, you know, we've sold hundreds of thousands of products at this point. And so, it's becoming more realistic to actually launch things on our website.
Yeah.
And actually do more of like a pre-order type launch through our website. And so that's a route we're exploring right now. And we're trying to decide which of our innovative projects we want to save for Kickstarter and which we want to start just testing some on our site to see how will our customers respond to this. Additionally, we've said, you know, losing Kickstarter would be really devastating, right? Because that drives a significant portion of our revenue each year. And we love the community. But in like hand in hand with that, losing Facebook ads would be like just as serious, if not more scary for us.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to diversify our revenues all year long and say, how can we do this to really, make sure that we are driving traffic from a lot of different sources. And right now we're doing a big influencer marketing push. We're doing a lot of on social media. We're trying to build out our email campaigns. So between email, social, influencers, and just product launches on our website, I feel like over the next year, our goal is to be able to build out that like 50% of our revenues come from those types of activities that are not just Facebook advertising driven or are not Kickstarter driven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. I'm curious what you think about Instagram. It seems like just in the fairly recent past, they've started doing more marketing stuff you can do on Instagram. What's your take on that? Have you guys explored that at all? Or
we have a little, yeah. So Instagram is a unique platform because it's all about imagery there. They love, you know, really solid, high quality images. And so it hasn't been as effective for us as Facebook advertising. But we've been able to make it work on some of our products. We've run some ads through there and seen some success, but it's definitely not a focus for us because until now it's not, people don't, you know, it's weird because Facebook is such a social platform and Instagram still is like, it seems like it's more like, I don't know, look at me kind of thing.
For sure.
So yeah. I would say Instagram definitely has not been as influential for our business. We have, you know, 20,000 followers on Instagram. And when we do a sale or a post, we see some traction. But as far as like running paid advertising, no, it hasn't been a focus for us.
Hasn't worked for you as well. Interesting.
Cool. I hope that they'll iron it out or maybe we need to dial in more and figure it out. But that would be awesome. I mean, Instagram's a really cool platform. I have nothing against it. I just haven't been able to make it work.
Yeah, we're going to focus on the places that are successful, exactly. Right? Yeah, I was just curious where you guys are doing so much on Facebook, what your take was on Instagram. That's cool. Okay, so just a couple more things I want to cover with you.
Okay.
So with the bag and leading up to it, what do you attribute the success to of that campaign? You mentioned earlier that you just like struck a chord and like obviously people loved it. I think I travel a fair amount and being really organized is so important. So like it makes sense to me that people who travel a lot are passionate about like the gear that they have because it's important. But why do you think that campaign was so successful? Did you just master the marketing leading up to it? Was it the product was just awesome and people loved it? Or what do you think led to that being like unbelievably successful?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's a little of everything. We focus a lot on function. We've decided that that's one of our like biggest assets. And Jacob and I feel like it's one of the things that we do really well is taking an ordinary product and say, how can we make this more functional? So basically we look at a product, we look at everything that exists on the market. We take the coolest pieces of all of those things that we think are awesome and we just combine them into one. And that's kind of how we've always approached each of our products is to say, how can we make this more functional? And with our travel bag, we got it to a point where we're like, this is pretty awesome. And, you know, we tested it out and we went on a flight with it. And And eventually we're like, this isn't quite good enough. And so we literally went back to the drawing board and said, how can we make this more functional? We added more features and we got to the point where we're like, all right, this is it. And that's kind of like our story with each of our products is we always create something as awesome as we can. And then we say, how can we make this even better? You know?
Yeah.
And that I think struck a chord with the customers because they're seeing it and saying, this is exactly what I've been looking for. At the time, there weren't very many travel bags that focused on purely function and focused on, you know, having a space for everything. And now it's really becoming popular, you know, but mm-hmm. I think it was like a matter of timing. We had prepped our Kickstarter campaign really well for this one. The content, like video, photo, all of that, we hired it out to make it like a lot better mm-hmm. than our previous ones. You know, I had done all the like video editing before and it was just okay. You know, I'm not like a professional video editor. So anyway, we ended up just putting a lot more resources into that campaign. We knew how to do Facebook ads at that point ourselves. And we were running, you know, a considerable amount of paid advertising on that campaign to drive that much traffic. And you know, I think it came down to just, yeah, like you were saying, a lot of preparation. The product was spot on what it needed to be. And I think it's just a mass appeal product too, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone can appeal.
Everybody needs a bag.
Everyone needs a bag. And they love to, I mean, people love to travel and they love the idea of travel. And just that whole thing, I think, just kind of struck a chord. So,
yeah, that's so cool. Okay. One last question on the marketing piece leading up to it. Did you do a lot of like A/B testing on different images or different camp like Facebook ads and then say, okay, we've done 6 A/B tests and you know number 4 is hitting, or like how did you decide where to invest your money? Because it sounds like you put a lot into it.
Yeah,
that like makes me nervous in my head, like, oh, are we sure this is the one? How did you decide and kind of iterate on those?
Yeah, I'll give us a couple golden nuggets here and some more specific stuffs for those who are actually looking at launching a Kickstarter campaign. So what we do is we build out a landing page, and the landing page is super simple. Basically, a video at the top that's 10 seconds or less. All it is just a little stinger to say, check out how cool this is, right? Mm-hmm. And then right underneath that, it says, you know, enter your email below to be notified when we launch, or enter your email to get our special early bird pricing. Mm-hmm. And then a little opt-in, right? To enter your email. So
no commitment.
Right? No commitment. They don't have to do that. They can watch the video and bounce if they want. But if they're interested, then they'll enter their email.
Yeah.
And we drive Facebook ads before our campaign to that landing page. And, you know, for this travel bag, I think we'd gathered like 2,000 to 4,000 emails that weren't our current customers. So if you include current customers, I think we had like 9,000 to 10,000 emails of people that were like really interested in this. Mm-hmm. And so that landing page really helps, it helps you gauge the interest. It helps you get that customer base up front so that when you click launch, you email them immediately and say, hey, everyone quick and grab the early birds now because they're still available. And anyway, so yeah, we do some Facebook advertising before. We don't do any A/B testing like you were asking. We do that during the first couple weeks of the campaign. So we build out all of our ads and say, you know, are we targeting males or females? How are we breaking this down? And we A/B test different images, different copy, and we say which one of these is getting the best click-through rates. And then we just dial into that one, and then we push all our ad dollars there. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome. All right. Thank you so much. This has been amazing. Where can listeners learn more about your products? Where do they go?
Yeah. So if you're interested in our products, www.nomadic.com is our website, and that's N-O-M-A-T-I-C. And yeah, so you can go there. We have our travel bag that's live on the site right now and all of those accessories. And it's pretty awesome. So yeah, go check it out. And we have our backpack and travel pack are still on Indiegogo. You can pre-order those today. And those will hit our site the end of this year. So we're excited to have a couple more bags on the site. And yeah, if you're interested in the marketing, Maddox Labs is awesome. They do Kickstarter and post Kickstarter marketing for companies. And that's maddixlabs.com, MATIXLABS.com.
Cool. And for listeners who checked out the episode with Taylor, you guys were very instrumental, it sounds like, in their success, and things went really well with them. So, and if you haven't listened to that episode, you should check it out. It sounds like Maddox Labs is going really well.
Yeah, it is. And we were able to help, you know, Taylor Dane grow that, that awesome pillow. So I think, you know, it comes down to how innovative is your product. And, you know, assuming it's a good fit, we don't work with everyone. So we try to be a little picky, but with those who we do work with, you know, if we hope that we can grow your campaign and get you some more pre-sales. So
awesome.
Yeah.
John, thanks so much. Really thank appreciate you, your time. Appreciate this has it. Been great.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening this week, guys. Big thanks to our sponsor, Blue Canyon Visuals. If you need a super professional video for your business, check them out. And remember, you'll get 20% off your first project. Just mention Founder Story Podcast. Big thanks to John and Nomadic. They're sponsoring a giveaway this week, one of their awesome Tab wallets, as well as a Nomadic notebook and planner. To enter the giveaway, all you have to do is go to founderstorypodcast.com/join. Enter there and you will be entered for a chance to win. All right, guys, thanks so much. I'll see you next week.